So let's introduce ourselves. You came to the Solidarity Center today to teach a class on unions. Can you give me some of your backgrounds and why you feel like it's a good thing for people to be aware of what unions are?
The class is in a discussion format. We are moderating it with a short introduction, and it's going to be basically a discussion. My history, I'm a 10-year member in Workers' World Party. I'm a union member and delegate. I'm a member of SEIU 1199.
How about yourself?
Gabrielle, and I'm also, of course, in Workers' World, and a longtime union organizer. I, as a telephone operator, helped organize 18,000, was one of the leaders of the drive to organize 18,000 women into the union, and we won the first national affirmative action plan in the United States, and many, many other struggles and union activities and strikes since then.
The unions in the United States went along with certain trades, and then there were other people who didn't have unions. Did that seem natural to you when you were in the unions that it would be only for certain people, even sometimes within a particular organization, some people would be all unionized and some people wouldn't be?
Yes. Unions in this country are pretty much on the defensive today. My institution, for example, I work for Columbia University. And there's an incredible amount of union erosion going on there through many means, even sometimes with the assistance of the worker. So it's a tough environment, and you'll find areas where there are people doing similar work, and some are union and some are not. That's one of the struggles we have to ahead of us.
Going back to this question that you asked, well, of course, a lot of what you're describing was before we were born, when all the unions were organized by trade. And of course there was a tremendous development with the rise of the CIO, which was organization on an industrial basis, and opening up the unions to black workers and women and so on. But all these changes, and there'll be more changes to come, really evolve out of the objective changes that are going on in how capitalist industry is structured, and we're starting to see changes emerging now for that same reason, new forms of organization, and the unions, which are limited, the union leaderships, which are at current time under tremendous objective assault, but also subjectively are wedded into the old traditional labor relations, bargaining, you know, mode, that we're going to have to break through that and make another leap forward. But it is in these times of crisis that these new forms, these new strategies are born. In the history of the labor movement, that's always been the case. Economic crisis, the unraveling of the old way of organizing the workers has led from below to a new form of organization with the unions. And so the unions now... You look now, who would have thought, even 5 years ago, that the AFL-CIO would have sent out an advisory nationally telling all of its affiliates to participate in May Day demonstrations. May Day used to be, you know, only the communists talked about having a May Day demonstration.
So let's go back a little bit. You see a change from the time when you first started in your unions where it seemed to be like a normal thing that people should join a union. Obviously, you're saying you felt there was some benefit in being in a union.
Well, take it away from the individual case. The decline in union membership has been mostly because of the tremendous loss of jobs in industry where the unions were concentrated. Though hundreds of thousands of industrial workers lost their job in a restructuring. Other hundreds, millions of workers have been living with concessions and attacks on their unions for now going on 30 years. Tax. That is what has created the decline in overall membership and has created a decline in interest. But that can be quickly reversed when the union movement begins to regroup with new tactics and strategies.
Well, tell me how the unions were not able to respond to these attacks, and tell me what sort of attacks happened in the past 30 years.
Well, the upsurge that Gabriel referred to in the union movement is necessary because the unions have to survive. They have to broaden their struggles. I think the leadership is realizing this, and that's why a call like that went out. It's objective factors that are leading to it. This jobless recovery, for example, the changing workforce into this service sector. We have also, I think, more militant workers in the working class in the United States today than 5-10 years ago. So that's also a factor, I think.
That's a big factor, yeah. I mean, there's more immigrants, there's more Black, Latino, women, lesbian and gay workers. There's the workers that don't have, you know, the long time belief that everything was just going to stay the same. You know, you look at the construction trades are really hard hit now. And these are workers that are still in trades rather than industry-wide, which held them back and had a long period of racism where they excluded many workers from joining. You know, his father and son. And then that had to be fought and broken through. But they're now half the year they're sitting on the bench without jobs. And they thought that everything was just going to keep going on, you know, permanently. And they didn't really care what was happening to the rest of the world.
So that is radicalizing this type of...
Of course it's radicalizing. Now when you go 30 years ago, when you... go out and go to a union demonstration with anti-war literature, or because it's very connected, is the struggle of the working class against war, or other things, you had a most difficult time. Now you go anywhere, talk to all the workers, you can talk to them about what's going on in capitalism, and there's an interest and a desire to find out more and learn more. But the problem, you asked before, well, what happened in those industries and those unions that got decimated, like the steel workers and the mine workers and the auto workers and, you know, just powerful house unions born out of struggle, militancy. The capitalist class, based on all the profits that they had earned from the labor of those workers, restructured those industries. The globalization, going all around the world to scour the world for the cheapest source of labor and more materials. The scientific technological revolution, which meant that, you know, they could force one worker to produce so much more and be even more exploited.
And force them to compete against
And force them to compete into the global competition of labor. So the reason why the unions... And they came back to them and they hit them again and again and again and again. It just went on, and it was led in a lot of times by the capitalist state when the Reagan administration, you know, crushed the PATCO workers, the air traffic controllers. But the problem was the union leadership at the time, and it was not their fault that this happened. They are not responsible for it happening. But because they believed so much in thinking that, oh, well, we just keep collective bargaining and every year we're going to get a little bit better and we're going to have good labor relations and we're going to collaborate with the capitalist class on international imperialism and we're going to open up a new plant like Saturn and get away from this antagonism, you know, that we have and so on like that, that's the way we're going to accept it. They're in control. The capitalists own it all. They're in control of it all. And so this is the best we could do. Because they couldn't see it any other way. They couldn't see it the way the changes in that was going on into capitalism led the workers in these very same industries in the 30s to carry out the occupation of the factories. This was... High unemployment existed. They were threatened. They knew they couldn't just strike, that the army would come in, the National Guard would come in. So they picked a defensive strategy that was also an offensive. And they went in and they occupied the plants. And they said, this is our labor. These are our plants. And by doing so, they forced a new situation. And it was out of those struggles that this Congress of Industrial Unionization was born. And even the Roosevelt administration, the Secretary of Labor, after they occupied, not before, said, well, they had a right to do it because they have a property right in their jobs. So if you view that the union is only an instrument that can have these negotiations and bargaining the way the bosses tell you you can be, if you accept these relations with the capitalist class, then when a new crisis comes down like this, you are stuck in a rut. We need new strategies, new tactics, coalescing, general strikes that become people strikes, occupations, takeovers. But the struggle, first of all, for all of us, is how to think of these strategies and ideas, and then how to explain them and promote them to the ranks of the workers. That's our struggle, as if we were working for that company ourselves.
So in this regard, the whatever happened in Wisconsin, where the right of collective bargaining was actually under attack, do you see this as a wake-up call? And do you see now unions as ready to go back to the sort of strategies that you're speaking about in the 1930s?
I think the unions have had wake-up call after wake-up call. Well, that was definitely a wake-up call if you were still asleep. But a wake-up call a couple of years ago could have been the failure to pass the Employer Free Choice Act. Unions spent a lot of money in political action funds to put somebody in office who they believed would fight for collective bargaining. And it didn't happen. It was pretty much just abandoned. There was not much of a fight. So that should have been a wake-up call. All of the attacks on unions since PATCO, there have been wake-up call after wake-up call. So,
what I
you
think,
know, how many times do you wake up?
Yeah, but I think what was different about Wisconsin was that the wake-up call didn't come because of the attack by the... it was a shock to them. They were shocked. If you talk to people who were union leaders in AFSCME and public workers, like Gilbert was telling us, we had an AFSCME president from Wisconsin speak last week. He said that on the first day that the announcement was made, some of the union leaders were in tears. They were in such shock. But the wake-up call was the response of the people, to which a great debt of gratitude should be first sent to the youth and the students and the teaching assistants, who first went in and occupied the Capitol, and then labor came in to support it. The fact that from all over the state, private sector and public sector workers were in there, that they had taken a militant action, that they had done. The wake-up call, the shock was the attack. The wake-up call was the response of the people, of the workers themselves. I think that was the wake-up call, where they themselves were believing all this nonsense about people aren't for the unions and people blame the unions and all this ads and propaganda that, you know.
But the question is the wake-up, will it be a wake-up call for the unions, I believe?
Right. Oh. And perhaps as a follow-up question and the last question, since you have to go and teach a class, is there now a new role for unions in a political, economic, and social makeup of our society, and perhaps even as a leadership in the left, and a change from a capitalist society to something else?
Yes.
Okay.
I think that's really our role, but the union's role is still to organize workers and fight the bosses. I don't think it's changed that much. I think there's room for more militancy in the unions. But I think the role is the same, and the task.
Well, while revolutionaries are seeking to overthrow the whole system, and unions' purpose is to moderate exploitation, mm-hmm. But that doesn't mean that the unions and the workers can't come up with revolutionary tactics and play a revolutionary role in the struggle for socialism.
Absolutely, absolutely.
That's what, and like Richard said, that's what we're...
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate it.